Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Lamed Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the second line from the top of Daf Lamed Hey. We have been discussing the issue of a woman collecting her ksuba. And the concern arose that maybe the woman already received the payment or part of the payment of the ksuba. So originally there was a method of ensuring that when she's coming to collect, she hasn't already received, and that is by making her swear that she hadn't received any payment yet. However, there arose a situation where, as the Mishnah says, nimnu milahashpia, they stopped, they resisted from imposing an oath, but as a result of the non-oath, so the woman wouldn't collect her ksuba, because again, as we said, the fear is that she already received partial payment. The Mishnah, of course, goes on to tell us the solution that Rabban Gamliel Hazokin instituted, the imposition of a neder, of a vow. But in the meantime, we're focusing on the Mishnah's point of nimnu milahashbia. On the side of the Gemara, you'll notice a nosei slash mivne. Nosei, the topic heading, mivne, a structural note that we combine into one comment. A triangle appears. These are nisyonos, the triangles that you see in the Gemara, and we've numbered them. You have one at the opening of the Gemara, and then a third of the way down the page you see a second one. These are nisyonos lahasbir loma nimnu milahashbia mona kedei lahagvis lo ksubasa. Why did they resist the shvua, the oath imposition? Why did they resist that approach? We open up the Gemara, my time off. Why was it nimnu milahashpia? Why did they resist imposing an oath upon the woman? In leimo mishum derav kahana. If it's because of the story involving that which Rav Kahana teaches, you'll notice we have a long bracketed section. Within the brackets, the Rav Kahana story is presented. If we skip the brackets, though, just to preserve the flow of the Gemara, after saying, if you think that it's because of Mishum Rav Kahana, let's skip the bracketed section for a moment. It says, E Mishum Ha, if that was the reason, namely the chashash of a false oath, like was the case in the story within the bracketed section, then my iria almona, why does the Mishnah speak about the issue of a widow collecting the ksuba, afilu grushonami, even when it comes to a divorcee who's also entitled to a ksuba, the same logic would apply that she should not have an oath imposed upon her. And yet that's not the case. Aloma omer Rabbi Zerma Shmuel lo shanu ela amana. The nimnu milhashbia, the resistance of imposing an oath, is only with regard to the almona, the widow, aval grusha mashbienoza. But in the case of a divorcee, we do impose the oath when she wants to come to collect her ksuba to ensure us that she hasn't already received payment. She is subjected to an oath. So we go back to the Gemara, to the bracketed section. We're asking why nimnu milashbia? So if you say it's Mishum de Rav Kahana, the Gemara continues on the third line from the top. The Amar Rav Kahana of Yamri Law, another version by way of names, is Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. Maise ba'odem echa, there was an incident involving an individual, Bishnei Batsores. Bishnei means during the years of. The word shnei, shonim, the years of batzoros, of famine. Shehivke dinor zov etzel almona, he entrusted a gold dinor coin by a widow. Vehini chosoi bekad shel kemach, and as far as storing it or hiding it, she hid it in a vessel, in a jar containing flour. And mistakenly, v'af osoy bepas, she took the jar of flour one day and poured its contents into a bowl and mixed water, made dough out of it and baked it into a loaf of bread. V'nosnosoy le'oni, and she gave it to a poor man. V'yomim bo bal hadinar, v'omar lo, some time later, The owner of the gold coin came and said to the almona, said to the widow to whom he had entrusted it, Havi li dinari, give me my gold coin. Omra le, now she doesn't have the gold coin to give back. It was baked into that loaf of bread. So she says to the owner of the coin, Yehene sam hamoves be'echod mi bonel shel oiso isha, let poison, deathly poison, affect one of her own children. When she says shel oisa isha, that woman, she's referring to herself. She says, let one of her children, essentially she's saying, let one of her children die, im nehenesi mi donarach klum, if I had any benefit from your gold coin. In other words, she's saying, I don't have your coin, but I don't think for one second that I took it for myself, that I had any benefit from it, and to empower her words, she's showing how honest she is by her claim, by saying that if she did have any benefit from it, let her one of her own children die. Omru, it was reported, Lo hoyu yomim mu'atim at shemes echo mi boneho. Not much time went by, and in fact, one of her children died. Ukshishomu chachoma badovar, Omru, and when the sages heard this story, they said as follows. And what we're going to read now is going to undergo a certain change in the Gemara, so to see the whole picture, just to wait till we finish. What did the Chachomim say? Ma mi shenishba be'emes kach. Mind you, here's a woman that swore honestly, and look what happened. Her son died. Hanishbal sheker achas kama v'kama. All the more so, someone who swears falsely, the death would certainly result. The point that we want to emphasize right now is that swearing is a dangerous thing to do. And certainly if we're talking about imposing an oath on a woman who claims she didn't receive the ksuba, and if she did, you can imagine what would happen if she swears falsely. The Gemara asks, "My taimo I ansha." Why did this woman receive the punishment? Why did her child actually die? Answer, "De ishtarshi lo mokom dinner." She actually did benefit from the coin. What was her oath? She said, let one of her children die if she had any benefit from the coin. Well, if she had benefit from the coin, so according to her own curse, the child should die. And she did benefit. How did she benefit? The coin took up a certain amount of space in the jar of flour. And that jar of flour was, we'll say, just enough for the baking of that loaf. And she made the loaf thinking that the entire jar was just flour, and in fact that fellow's coin made up some of the volume. Had the coin not been there, she would have had to add, so to speak, that amount of flour that in fact was taken up by the coin in this case. So she saved from her own expenses that amount of flour. That's what the Ishtarshi Lo Mokum Diner. She saved flour, the amount that the coin took up in the jar. Well then, if that be the case, she did benefit from the coin. The Gemara described the woman as having sworn honestly. Umay Mishinish Babemis. So then what do you mean in this in just a couple two lines above where you said, mind you, someone who swears honestly. She didn't swear honestly, she swore that she didn't benefit at all. The Gemara says, Kami Shinish Babemis. She's like someone who swore honestly. She intended to be honest in her oath. Post facto, it turns out that she did benefit from it, but that wasn't her intention was not to lie. Rashi says on the first narrow line, Shinishba Bemis, Kamishinishba Bemis, Deho Shayegeshi. She was mistaken, Ubnesha Aina Shvua Miruba, and because the punishment for false oaths is so great, Nimneru Mi Lahashbia. That's why the sages resisted imposing shvuas on people, on women coming to collect their ksubas. So that's all part of a long marking. Do you see from the triangle, second line from the top, we have a long ilema essentially. If you're going to say that this is the reason for nimniru milahashbia, the Gemara continues, e mishum ha, if this is the reason, namely the fear that maybe there will be a lie in the oath, like in the story we just saw, my iri almona, why the resistance of imposing a shvua only in the case of an almona, a widow coming to collect afilu grushonami, there should have been resistance to imposing an oath even for a grushos coming to collect. Alomar Rabbi Zera Shmuel, therefore, why did Rabbi Zera in the name of Shmuel say, lo shanu elo almona? The nimniru milahashpia, the resistance of imposing an oath is only with regard to a widow coming to collect. Aval grusho mashbien osa, but a grusha who comes to collect, we will impose an oath upon her, ensuring that she didn't receive any payment yet. So whatever reason you give, it's going to have to reflect a distinction between the case of an almona and the case of a grusha, a divorcee. The Gemara answers, and here we have the final answer. Why they resisted imposing oaths by almonas, almona shiny, the case of an almona is different. The almona continues living in the same house as the bereft children. And she, by, we'll say, a natural course of events, she is taking care of them. She's torachas, she's troubling herself for their benefit. Asya l'roi hetera. She could actually rationalize that partial payment that she already received toward her ksuba was really for her troubles, for her efforts. And she could actually swear, using this rationale, that as far as the actual ksuba payment, which is due to a woman when she becomes a widow, she hasn't received anything. Ah, the partial amount that she received, which technically was toward her ksuba, she will explain that away and saying that's because of the tircha, the troubles that I invested in caring for my deceased husband's children. We take a look at the Rashi. Rashi that we're looking at is on the third narrow line from the top of in the narrow column, Asya l'orei hetera b'dover muat, concerning a small, let's say, down payment that she received toward her ksuba, usvur shein piron la shebeschar toruha not lasa. She would explain that away and say that wasn't paid toward my ksuba. That was paid for the efforts and troubles that I invest in the deceased's children. We turn back to the Gemara. Before going on in the text, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei / Mivne heading. The diamond highlights Shtei L'Shoinois B'Rabbi Huda, two versions of Rabbi Huda. Mosai ein mashbien almona. Under what circumstances would we not impose an oath on the widow? Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav Yirmi bar Abba, Rav Shmuel Dami Chavaihu. Both Rav and Shmuel say lo shonu elo bebeisdin. That which we taught in the Mishnah that there is no shvua imposed, that is when you are in a court. Avo chutz lebeisdin mashbien osa. But outside the court, a shvua and an oath can be imposed. The distinction between a shvua in Beis Din versus a shvua outside of Beis Din, you can see in Rashi, and let's learn the Rashi together. Chutz lebeis din mashbienosa, sheshvuas hadayonim, the court-imposed oath, shel Torahi. First of all, it's a Torah-level oath. V'nokat sefer Torah b'yodeh u'tfilin. And when the individual swears, he has to hold either a sefer Torah or tefillin, a holy object like we just described. U'mashbia lo b'shem u'b'kinui, and it, as part of the oath is the mentioning of God's name or a variant name, kinui. Kidashchon b'Avrom, as we find by Avrom Avinu, Simno Yodcha b'chui v'ashpiocha b'Hashem, he represents the archetype of such a shivua, where there was, we call it Nikitas Chefetz, there was the holding of a holy item, and there was the mentioning of God's name. V'oin shemeruba, and the punishment for a false oath is very great. V'chutz lebeisdin, that's a shivua d'rabbonan. That's you notice the lettering that we have here. This lettering corresponds to lettering before. So in contrast to the aleph before, which was shel Torah, this is shvua derabbanan. And we say bekilas orur. That is in contrast with the gimel before, where we said a shvua shvuas hadayonim involves the mentioning of God's name. Not so in the case of a shvua chutz lebeisdin. It's rather using a term of curse, a curse if one is lying, and v'lo nokit midi, and he is not holding anything in that case, no sefer Torah, no tefillin, v'ein oin shekol kach, and the onesh isn't so great. That's in contrast to the point mentioned before of oin sha meruba. So with regard to the statement made by Rav Shmuel, the resistance to imposing an oath, that's only with regard to that serious type oath. But an oath outside of the court, that would be imposed on a woman trying to collect, imposed on the almona trying to collect her ksuba. Gemara continues, Amy, is that so? V'hol Rav lo magvi ksuba l'ar malta. Rav didn't enable an almona to collect her ksuba, which indicates that when we say nimnu milahashpia, there was a resistance to imposing the oath. That's a total resistance. If the statement made just now by Rav Yirmi or Ba'abo claiming that Rav agrees that a shvu chutz lebesin could be imposed, so why wouldn't he impose that? So, Kasha, this represents a difficulty. So, on the one hand, you're saying that Rav says Shvua Chutz LeBeis Din could be imposed, and yet we see that Rav would not enable Almonas to collect their ksubas, because there was no means of guaranteeing that she hadn't already received payment, indicating to us no imposition of Shvua even outside of Beis Din. That would have been a good way to ensure that she hadn't received anything and would have then thereby been able to collect. But yet, Rav would not enable her to collect. Besura masnu hachi. Up till now was the sura version. Benardo masnu hachi. In Nahardo, the other center of Torah study in Babylonia, Nahardo, they taught as follows. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. Lo shonu elo bebeisdin. Avochutz Lebezdin Mashbian Osa. According to this version, you can see that Rav and Shmuel are not taught together. Shmuel makes the distinction, namely the Nimnu Hashbia is only in Bezin, but outside of Bezin they would impose an oath. For Rav Omar Afilu Chutz Lebezdin Namiyin Mashbian Osa. And Rav says that even outside of Basin, no imposing of Shua. Rav Litame. Rav, in saying that, is consistent with what he rules elsewhere. The Rav Lo Magvik Suba Le'ar Malta. Rav would not enable an almona to collect her ksuba, indicating that even outside of Basin, he would not impose an oath. Gemara asks, v'le'adra v'ligvei, why can't she collect the ksuba? Why can't we try another approach called neder? A neder, as opposed to an oath, a neder is referred to in English as a vow. In other words, the woman would vow that if I received any payment of my ksuba, then all baked goods be forbidden to me. Some type of serious vow that would show her honesty in her claim that she received no ksuba payment. And in asking this question, one can certainly conclude that a vow, as opposed to an oath, a neder, is a less severe entity than a shvua. The Gemara responds, Bishnei de Rav, in the years of Rav, Kili Nidri. Nidri were, as we just said, less severe, but so less severe, they were taken lightly in the eyes of people. And people would vow things even if it wasn't true. And therefore, Rav had no vehicle for ensuring her honesty as claiming not having been paid any ksuba yet, and therefore he wouldn't enable them to collect ksuba this way. We might add, just parenthetically, that there might be other legal methods to ensure, but that would involve, let's say, for example, if the woman would be able to produce witnesses that would indicate that the husband never paid her the ksuba. So maybe that would be a method, but in the absence of witnesses, or in the absence of those alternative means, this method, imposing oaths, imposing vows, were a non-option as far as Rav is concerned. And that's why the Gemara says that Rav was not magvig suba for almonis. As we continue in the Gemara, we see a new marking. A house shape appears on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh heading. Shnei Maisim im Almonis, two stories involving widows, Shibol Lifnei Rabbonim Ligvois Ksubasen, who approached rabbis to enable them to collect their ksubas. The double underline that you see is explained, V'nemar Lohen Sherav Lo Magvi Ksuba L'Almonis. This is going to repeat itself, where it's told to the women that, sorry, we can't help you. Rav would not enable women to collect, women meaning widows, to collect their ksubos. So now we turn to the Gemara. Ahida asoi lekame de Rav Huna. It was an almona, a widow that wanted to collect her ksuba. And she came to Rav Huna. Omar lo, Rav Huna said to her, my avid, like, what can I do for you? The Rav lo magvi ksuba l'armalta. Rav would not enable ksubas to be collected by widows. Omrole, so the woman, she exclaims, and we're going to see in the next 2.5 lines, the woman is going to swear on her own that she didn't receive any money yet. Midiu taimo elo dilmo na kitno midi miksubasi. Rav's refusal, is it not because maybe the woman already received part of her ksuba payment? Chai Hashem tzivokos. That's an expression that is tantamount to an oath. That's a shvua. So she swears, im nehenesi miksubasi klum. She swears basically that she had no benefit from the ksuba whatsoever. Well, here you have a woman that is jumping, so to speak, on her own and swearing, using God's name, indicating she had not received it. So she must be, she sounds like a very honest, very serious woman. Amar Rav Huna, upon hearing this, said, Moide Rav Bekeifetzes. Rav will concede that if a woman initiates the Shavua, then she is entitled to collect the Ksuba. Hahid Asoy Lekame de Rabo Bar Rav Huna. A similar story of a widow coming to collect her Ksuba. Here, she comes to Rabo, and we note the son of Rav Huna. We had in our previous story, Rav Huna. Here is a story involving the son of Rav Huna. Omar lo, and Rabo says to her, "My avid lo, what can I do for you?" Number one, the Rav lo magvi ksuba lar malta. Rav doesn't enable almonas to collect their ksubas, as we've said already many times, out of fear that maybe she already received partial payment. The Abamori lo magvi ksuba lar malta, and father as well would not enable almonas to collect their ksubas. Omra le, so she said, okay, if you're not paying me the ksuba, that means I'm continuing my life as a widow in the home of the Yisoyimim, the home of my husband, then havli mezoni, then give me my food allowance, maintenance, pay for my maintenance. Omar law. Of course, when we say pay, give me mezoni, it means from the estate, I want you to enable me to collect maintenance funds. Omar law. So Rabo says, mezoni nami les lech. You're not entitled to mezonos either. Diomar of Yudomar Shmuel, hatoivas ksubosa bebeistin ein lo mezonos. A woman who was widowed, once she turns to the court to collect her ksuba, just the mere a petition to ksuba entitlement is reason for her to no longer receive mezonos. And that law is based on the text of the ksuba, whereby as long as a woman maintains her widow status, she's entitled to mezonos. But once she indicates that she wants to receive her ksuba, that shows us that she wants to start a new life, she wants to marry someone else, and as a result of the text of the ksuba, she is no longer entitled to mezonos. Well, this woman is getting very frustrated. Notice, she was not entitled to the ksuba based on Rav. She's now not entitled to mezonos based on Shmuel. Omra le, so she said to Rabba, Avchua lekurse kebei tre avdali. Now avchua lekurse literally means let your chair or your stool, your mattress, your couch, whatever you're sitting on, let it be flipped over. She's basically totally enraged and cursing him that he should lose his stature. And why is she so irate? Because you're ruling to my detriment by citing two different authorities, depriving me of ksuba based on Rav, depriving me of mezonos based on Shmuel. And the result is her cursing Rabba. Hafchu lekurse v'tirtzua. So those present, they quickly flipped over his chair and then restraightened it so as to have her curse fulfilled and hopefully sparing Rav of any other problems. Even so, he was not spared from, in fact, becoming ill. Omar le Rav Yehuda le Rav Yirma Bira. Adra bebezdin, v'ash be'ah chutz lebezdin. Rav Yehuda says to Rav Yirmiya, impose a neder upon a widow trying to collect her ksuba when she comes to the court. and impose a shvua, an oath, in accordance with Shmuel from above, outside of the court. V'leisi kola v'lipo b'odni. This is a phrase, we can translate it literally, means, and let the sound, let the result come to my ears. Rashi says, V'leipo b'odni chofei tzani shiishma hakul b'oznai shehuva ksuba b'yamai. I want to hear that in my days a woman was able to collect her ksuba. Rashi goes on, Deboino ki hechi d'avid bo maisa. Rashi says on this, Deboino d'avid bo maisa ki Shmuel Rabbi. This is all Rav Yehuda saying, I want it to be known that the halacha follows Shmuel, my teacher. Rav Yehuda learned by Shmuel. Rashi continues, Lahotzi mi libon shel tamidov shel Rav, kagon Rav Huna, ubeiz dino shelo hoyu magvin ksubos almono. To counter the approach of Rav Huna, and who was a student of Rav, so to the exclusion of the approach of the students of Rav, like Rav Huna, and his court that would not enable a ksuba to be paid to an almona. So here, Rav Yehuda was very interested in an almona getting paid through this method. The neder imposed upon her in the court, and outside of the court, a shvua. And all that, of course, as we've said so many times, is to ensure us once and for all that this woman who had not received any payment toward her ksuba, thereby entitling her to receive full payment. Before we go further, we glance at the side of our Gemara. We have a Nosei topic heading, which reads, Gvias Ksubas Grusha, a divorcee coming to collect her ksuba, al yedei shvua, al yedei neder, through either an oath or through a vow. You'll notice that we have a little star to the left-hand side of the Gemara text. If you skim up the page, you'll find the corresponding one, where this quote comes from. Gufa, Omar Rabbi Zera, Omar Shmuel. Lo shonu elo almona. We had said before that the resistance to imposing oaths was only with regard to a widow coming to collect. Avagrusha mashbien osa. But when it comes to a divorcee, we would impose a shvua. The Gemara asks, Grusha, the Adra lo, and when it comes to a Grusha, would we not impose merely a Neder upon her? You're saying we go all the way, even a Shvua. Who says? And the question that Gemara raises now, you'll notice, is a long question, taking us to the second line from the top of Amud Beis. V'ha shol chumitam, it was sent from Eretz Yisrael, a message, and there's quite a bit of Aramaic here in this message. Take note, by the way, that the message goes to the second line from the top of Omid Beis. What was their message? Ayich Ploniso Bas Ploni. This is a reference to the name of a specific woman. Kabilas Gita Minyodo de Acho Bar Hedaya, the mystery Ayomori. This woman received a divorce from the hands of her husband, named Acho Bar Hadaya, and he's at times called Aya Mori. There's a necessity of making reference to alternative names as well when you're dealing with the matters of divorce. Venadris Vaastris Perishabel Malo de lo Kabilis Miksubosa. She was no deris. Note, we dashed underline. That is the key word. We're dealing here with a Grusha, and that's why we also highlighted the word Gita. We have a divorcee who vowed a neder, not a shvua, a neder, and her vow stated that all the fruit of the world shall be prohibited to her if she had received any payment of her ksuba, and she mentions with the following exception, So let's read that phrase again. Nadrus Vasus Per Shabal Malo, the lo kabilis miksubasa elo. She received nothing from her ksuba except for glufkaro echod, v'sefer tilim echod, v'sefer iov, v'mem sholos bluim. She admits that she received a glufkara, an article of clothing, maybe an overcoat, and a scroll of Tehillim of Psalms, and a scroll of the book of Eov, and a scroll of the book of Proverbs. A mimshalos is a mishle, bluim. Bluim is worn out. In other words, not in great condition. And the message continues. This message from the Shochu Mitam says that we're at the top of Omid Beis, the Shamnum. Shamnum is we made an evaluation. The Chamisha Mona. The value of those was 5 mona. That's an amount of money. So she, as far as the total value of her ksuba is concerned, she's entitled to total value minus 5 mona. When she comes to you, then enable her to get the rest. Well, what do you see from this incident? You see, this would be a kasha on Shmuel. Shmuel said that when it comes to grusha, we impose a shivua. And here we have a case of a grusha who is being subjected only to a neder. The Gemara answers, Omer Avashi, hahu get yivmin hafe. The story, in fact, was involving a widow. The reference to a get, it's a case where it was a woman whose husband died. There was a surviving brother of the deceased husband. She had been left a widow, and her husband had died, leaving no children. And there was a Yavam, the brother-in-law, who was there. And he didn't want to go on with the Yibum marriage, so he gave her a divorce document. A divorce document, in the case of Yibum, is it's a rabbinic-level instrument. And the result of a Yavama receiving a get from the Yavam, from the surviving brother-in-law, results in the woman not being able to marry any other surviving brothers. Okay, so we have this, in effect, she's a widow. She's not going to be going through with the Yibum marriage. So she wants to collect her ksuba from her first husband's estate. So, very simply, this story involved an almona coming to collect her ksuba. Oh, so Shmuel said that when it comes to an almona, we impose a neder. We don't impose a shavua. Hiskin Rabon Gamliel Azokin Shteino Deres V'chulei. Our Mishnah taught that as a result of the non-imposition of Shavuot, so we will impose a neder upon her in order for us to be ensured that she didn't receive any ksuba payment. And through that neder, she'll then be able to collect her ksuba. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a new marking. A triangle appears, and on the side, under the Nosei / Mivne heading, we have shtei deos, two opinions. Ad mosai almona yechola lidor the ligvois ksubasa. Up to what point do we enable the almona to vow and thereby collect the ksuba? Rav Huna says ad shelo tinosei lesheni. As long as she doesn't enter marriage with a second husband. Rav Nachman, afilu niseis lesheni noderes v'goivaz. Even if she marries a second husband, that still applies. She can swear and collect the ksuba. When we speak about the woman marrying a second husband and her then vowing, we get involved with the issue of the husband's powers that the Torah grants him to annul her vows. Just as a general point to bear in mind, the strength of the vow, giving her believability, is only as strong as the longevity or the staying power, the survivability of the vow. But if, for some reason, we would say that, okay, even if she takes a vow, the vow can be annulled, the vow can be voided, then it doesn't accomplish the goal of showing that she is very serious. She then, you could have a situation that she'll vow, she has a fallback position where the vow could be annulled, and she'll claim that she received, she'll claim she received no payment, vow to that effect, and the vow can be undone, and she's not going to be in violation of the vow, and in the meantime, she really already did receive a ksuba payment, and she'll be double dipping. We now continue in the Gemara. We saw on the third line from the top of Amud Beis, Hiskin Rav Gamliel Hazokein Shetaino Deres Alma Rav Huna Lo Shonu, the teaching of the Mishnah of Rav Gamliel Hazokein that she can vow, the widow can vow and collect uksuba, Ela B'Shelo Nises. That's as long as she hasn't married a second husband. Avol Nises Ein Madirino. So if she married a second husband, we don't impose a vow on her, and of course, without that, she won't be able to collect her ksuba. The Gemara asks, Nises, my time alo, as far as her marrying a second husband, why do you say that the vow loses its value? Demever lo baal, because the new husband can annul it. That's a Torah-granted power that husbands have when they hear their wives vowing. Well, Kilo Nises Nami, even if she doesn't remarry, if that's your concern, L'chi Minsevo Mefer Lobal, she might vow now, but when she gets married, the new husband will annul that vow, giving the woman the, as we mentioned earlier, the security of her vow not really being of any longevity, of any staying power. So she'll freely vow, trying to mislead us into thinking that she didn't receive any ksuba payment. Had she received it, she would be subject to the restrictions of her vow, and then, lo and behold, she would remarry, the vow would be annulled, and she'd have nothing to lose through her having already received her ksuba payment and getting a second round. The Gemara says, no, that's not a concern. What Rav Huna taught is true, that if she hasn't remarried, we'll rely on her vow. Ah, you ask, but when she remarries the husband, the new husband will annul it. Ein habal mefer bekodmin. A husband does not have the power to annul vows that were taken prior to his marriage with her. Question: V'nechosh dilmo azlo legabi chocham v'shori lo? Is there still not a possibility of the woman having her vow released through consultation with a Torah scholar? That's called Heter Chocham or Sheilas Neder. This is an institution within the realm of Nedarim, enabling a vow, a person to be released from their vow. So isn't that a problem here? So she can end up vowing she received no ksuba payment, and she has that the security of approaching a Chocham and having the vow annulled. The Gemara says that's not a fear. Kosovar Rav Huna holds tzorech lefaret es haneder. And when a person approaches a sage for his intervention on their behalf in annulling vows, the client has to detail why they vowed in the first place. And upon pirut haneder, lefaret is to detail the circumstances of the neder, the sage will hear that the neder was taken to enable her to collect the ksuba, and he will not annul such a vow. Rashi, let's look at Rashi together, the fourth narrow line of the Rashi commentary, Tzorch Lefaret is a neder, Hanisha L'chocham Al Nidra, one who approaches a sage for release from the vow, Tzorch Lefaret Heich Nodar HaNeder Hazeh, the client has to detail what was the background for the vow. And when she details that she had sworn, that she had vowed to heirs, to orphans, in order to collect from them her ksuba, and the text of her vow was, if I had benefited whatsoever from my ksuba, then let such and such be forbidden. Well, lo shorula, they're not, the sage won't release her from such a vow. So that's not a fallback position for the woman, hence we can rely on her vow, once again, according to Rav Huna, provided she didn't marry a second husband and then vow. Rav Nachman Omar Afilu Nises. As far as Rav Nachman is concerned, even if she marries a second husband, she can vow that she hadn't received any ksuba payment and collect. Before we go further, on the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading. It reads as follows, Inyone Nedorim. We're going to touch on different topics that relate to vows. Neder Shehuda Barabim, a vow that was made in the presence of Rabim, 10 people. Al Das Rabim, that's a neder that was made with the approval of the public. Hanishalachocham, Haim Tzorch Lefaridis Nidro. This point we already discussed in the Gemara. One who seeks absolution of a vow through the intervention of a sage, does he have to detail the reasons for the neder? So now we turn back to the Gemara. Meisvei. The Gemara raises a question. You'll notice this is a question directed on Rav Huna. Rav Huna taught that the ability of the widow to vow and collect the ksuba, that's as long as she hasn't remarried. Here we have a Tanaic source. It says, Nises, goyve ksubosa im nodra. If she remarries, she collects her ksuba if she takes the vow. My love, nodra hashta. Does this not mean that she vows right now after she remarried? And she's able to collect the ksuba that way. That's a kasha on, that's a problem for Rav Huna. Look, that's not the explanation of this source. Rather, dinodra meikora. If the woman had vowed before she remarried, we can rely on that, enabling her to collect the ksuba. Question, Vahatanya. We have another source which is clearer than the one before. It says, Nises, if she remarried, noderes v'goyve ksubasa, she vows now and collects her ksuba. Well, that's not like Rav Huna. You'll ask, according to this source, you might ask, well, isn't the husband liable to annul the vow? How can you rely on this? The Gemara answers that the issue is the subject of a machlokes tanoim, tanoihi. There is a machlokes tanoim, there's an underlying machlokes tanoim, based on which we'll be able to explain Rav Huna on the one hand, who would have said that if she remarried, the neder is not going to help, and this Tanaic source which says if she remarries, she can still vow and collect the ksuba. So what's the Tanaic controversy that will help us to, explain or resolve these two opinions? De'ika leman de'omar, one Tanaic school holds, neder shehuda barabim yesh lo hafora. A neder that's made in public, maybe we should say even if it's made in front of 10, it nevertheless can be annulled. If that be the case, so there's no neder option for the woman who remarried. And according to this approach, neder shehuda barabim yesh lo hafora, she won't collect the ksuba because there is an annulment possibility. And therefore, Rav Huna held, Nises, if she remarries, we're not going to impose the neder upon her. It's simply not going to help. Because even if she would take the neder in public, the husband could still be mefer. Mefer means the husband could still annul such a vow. Let's continue in the Gemara. V'ika leman d'omar ein lo hafara. Another approach says that a vow taken in the presence of 10 cannot be undone. Oh, if it can't be undone, then the Tanaic source we saw before that said Nises Noderes Vigovik Subasa, right? She takes a vow in public in the presence of 10, and the husband cannot annul such a vow. So that will help us to explain the Tanaic source. So this Machlokes Tanoim helps us to understand Rav Huna's position on the one hand, and that is that Neder Shehudu Barabim, the husband could still be mefer, so there's no point in imposing a neder that can be easily undone by the husband. And the second, the Tanaic source will hold that a Neder Shehudu Barabim Ein lo hafora. The husband has no power over such a nether, and therefore, even if she remarries, she can still vow, and that vow has no rescission, and therefore collect her ksuba. The Gemara continues. Ibaya laho tzorach lefared es haneder o eino tzorach. One who approaches a chocham regarding a vow, seeking annulment of a vow, does he have to detail the reasons behind the vow or not? Rav Nachman Omar Eino Tzorech. Rav Papa Omar Tzorech. Rav Nachman Omar Eino Tzorech. Rav Nachman says that one does not have to detail the Amr Tzorech. If you're going to require a person to detail the reasons behind the vow, Zimnin de Gaiz Leila Dipure. He might, Gaius literally means to cut off. He might not say all of the reasons. He might abbreviate or simply report part of the reasons. The Chacham mai deshoma mefer. And the Chacham, only based on what he hears, will annul. And if the Chacham is going to hear only part of the story, the annulment might be an annulment based on, let's say, erroneous information. For had he heard the whole story, he wouldn't have annulled. So as a result, it's better not to get started with details. Rashi says, V'chacham eino mefer elo ladas ma sheyishma. The Chacham would annul only according to what he hears. Hilkach lo yifaret al ma nodar. Therefore, better not to start detailing at all. Elo yomar kach nodarti vasati la peros min ploni. All that the client is required to say is, I vowed, and through the vow, the vow would end up preventing me from benefiting from a certain kind of item, a certain kind of fruit, and the Chacham, based on that, could exercise the option of annulling. The Gemara continues, Rav Popo Omar Tzorech, the client seeking annulment must detail why he vowed, Mishum Milsa Di Isura. We look at Rashi, Mishum Isura, Shema Al Dvar Isur Nodra. The reason for the vow could be based on something that involves prohibition, kagon al givui ksuba. For example, our case of collection of ksuba, namely, if she doesn't detail why she vowed and she receives an annulment, so the woman will thereby be, we'll say, empowered to collect an entire ksuba when she already received partial payment. So that involves a matter of, we'll say, of theft, of receiving money that's not due to you. Another example, Ukagon Yesru Olai Kopers Shabalam Im Evor Avera Ploni. Imagine a person accepted upon themselves a vow prohibiting them from benefiting from all the fruits of the world if they go ahead and sin a particular sin. Ubo Lahatir is Nitro Stam Ferozila Avor Avera. The person has this tremendous urge to transgress that particular sin. The only thing preventing him was the knowledge that he would then thereby be prohibited through a vow from benefiting from all fruits of the world. And would anyone think that a chacham should annul such a vow, thereby, let's say, encouraging or enabling the person to pursue their wrongful desires? So it's important, as says Rav Papa, for the Chacham to hear the reasons for the vow so as to direct him whether or not he ought to annul it. The Gemara now raises a question. You'll notice we have a long question. This question is directed against Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said that one seeking annulment from a sage does not have to detail why he vowed. Tanan. The Tanaic source that we're about to read concerns a Kohen in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Kohanim in general, regardless of the Beis HaMikdash, are prohibited from marrying certain women. The most common case is a Kohen is prohibited from marrying a divorcee. Let us imagine a Kohen had violated the Halacha, married such a woman. Is it acceptable for him to serve in the Beis HaMikdash? So we don't want Kohanim married to prohibited women serving in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara continues, Hanoise Noshim Bavira, a Kohen who violated the Halacha and married a woman in sin, Posel, he is unfit to serve as a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, Ad Shigodir Hano, until he vows not to receive any benefit from her. The Tani Allah, and regarding this, it is taught, Noder V'Oved, the Kohen, all he has to do is to make the vow, even if he doesn't actually divorce her immediately, he vows not to benefit from her. The Oved, and serves in the Beis HaMikdash in the capacity of a Kohen. Oved means he offers sacrifices. Yored, he descends from the altar, he descends from his service. Umegaresh, and then divorce his wife. The point being that once he vows not to benefit from her, that assures us he will divorce her. If you're going to say that a person who seeks absolution from vows doesn't have to detail the reasons for the vow, should we not suspect that maybe this Kohen, who might be very happily married to the forbidden woman, he'll vow, he'll do the avoda, and as far as the vow being a deterrent for the Kohen for maintaining the marriage, it won't serve as a deterrent because he has the fallback position. He can always go to a Chacham who will release him from the vow. And why will the Chacham release him from the vow? Because the Chacham doesn't know that the vow was taken so as to enable him to continue doing service in the Beis HaMikdash. Had the Chacham known that, so he certainly wouldn't annul the vow. But according to Rav Nachman, where the client doesn't have to detail, is this not a possibility? So how can the Halacha rely on a Kohen vowing not to benefit from such a woman when he can in fact easily seek the vows, the absolution? We continue at the top of Daf Lamed Vav. Rav Nachman will tell you that a Kohen that is married to a forbidden woman, the Madrina Le Barabim, we will make that Kohen swear in public, in front of 10. By doing so, the vow is etched in concrete. It cannot be annulled. Well, Honicho Lamadom and Neder Shehuda Barabim Ein Lo Hafora. That approach is fine and good only according to one opinion, that a neder that was made, a vow that was made in public, has no absolution. According to those that hold that publicly made vows are subject to annulment, what is there to say? If you're going to say that you don't have to mafarate, you don't have to detail when you do approach the sage, once again, even though the vow was made in public, according to this opinion, it can be undone. How can we rely on such a Kohen vow to continue doing service in the Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara answers, Demadrina le aldas rabim. Rashi at the top line says, aldas rabim, kach yom rulo. We say to the Kohen thusly, Hareinu madir moscho aldatena. We, the public, are subjecting you to the vow according to our mindset. In other words, it's not a vow that's taken merely in public, but it's with the public's acceptance of the vow. Such a vow does not lend itself to annulment. The Omar Amemar. Amemar rules. Tilchusa. Afilu lemadim and neder shudu barabim yeshlo achora. Even according to the opinion that says a neder, a vow that was taken in public, is subject to annulment. Al das rabim, if it's done with the approval of the public, ein lo hafora. Such a vow cannot be annulled. And so Rav Nachman, even though he who vowed doesn't have to itemize and detail why the vow took place, nevertheless, to prevent the vow from being annulled, that can be accomplished through a neder, that's hudar al das rabim. The Gemara continues in the with this particular point of law, but this is, I would say, a side point as far as the flow of the sugya is concerned. And hence, we are using a semicolon marking, indicating that this isn't a total flow, but it's you'll see, it's a related but unrelated point. Vahani mili, that which we say that in neder shehudar al das rabim has no annulment, that's ledvar harashus. That's only where, let us say, the need for the seeming need for an annulment is for some kind of matter of option. Then we say, it doesn't have hafora. Aval ledvar mitzvah yesh lo hafora. If the need for annulment is in order to be able to accomplish a mitzvah, then even a neder shehudar al das rabim can be annulled. And there's a story behind this. Ki hahu makri dardaki. There was an elementary school teacher. Makri dardaki are children. So he taught children. The adre Rav Acha al das rabim. Rav Acha imposed upon this particular educator a vow, we'll say, distancing him from his work, that he should not teach children anymore. Why? Dave posha b'yanuki. Rashi says, choyfton yoyser midai. He used to impose corporal punishment upon them more than would be acceptable. Too much, as we say. V'ahadre Ravina. And Ravina had him reinstated. In other words, the vow would have to have been annulled. Why? Dolo ishtakach de dayek kavosei. There was no parallel educator as competent as he. So there was the mitzvah element of the Torah teaching mitzvah concern that enabled Ravina to annul the previously imposed vow that Rav Acha imposed on this individual that was originally designed to prevent him from continuing teaching children. And as we said, because without this guy, the kids wouldn't have been learning in such an accurate way. That's what the literal meaning of the Lo Ishtakach, the Dayek of us, say. They found no teacher as accurate, as precise as this particular individual. As far as teaching methodology is concerned, his maintenance of decorum and classroom control, that's already another story. Before we continue, that is, before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.